Hello again, and welcome to another edition of the International Soccer Preview by Soccer Files Canada. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor, and we are looking at the eight teams in the CONCACAF World Cup 2022 qualifying. We are previewing the eight teams in separate podcasts, two for each team. The first will focus on the team, its history, and prospects, with a special emphasis on their World Cup qualifying history. And in a separate podcast, we look at players, which, although somewhat artificially, we have organized position by position, with a look at the main candidates in each spot.
Right, and this one is the USA team, and we're considering an update podcast around Christmas time or at the end of the November games. So keep an eye out for that. And this podcast will be organized basically into three parts. So first is a bit of the history of the soccer team, including an introduction of the country, a look at the World Cup history. And this time with special emphasis on their World Cup qualifying history, because that's what we're in, is World Cup qualifiers. But we'll also take a kind of a superficial view of the regional cup, and then a closer look at recent performances, including their previous performance up till now in the 2022 World Cup qualifying. In other words, how did they get here? We'll take a look at their schedule for the upcoming games and a bit of a discussion about their key players. And finally, part three of the podcast will be their prospects. So their ranking, their head-to-head record with other countries in the group, and then a discussion about how we feel that they're going to do. So, can you tell us a little bit about the United States, Connor?
Right, so the United States is the second largest country in North America behind Canada. But in terms of population, they're first with about 332 million people. They're the third most populous country in the world. And in fact, among North America, they have about 56% of North America's population. So more than half of North American residents live in the United States.
Right, so that includes Mexico, or does it include Central America also?
That includes Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. So,
Oh, wow.
yeah, huge population to draw on.
Yes, they do. And actually, that's a bit of a plays into the thesis that I'm going to try to develop about the USA. How about nicknames? So we'll begin with the history here, but start with any nicknames that they have.
Yeah, a couple nicknames. The Yanks, the Stars and Stripes, probably the most common. And then the red, white, and blue. So, a couple very very American names for you.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, let's begin with just an overview of the team, like their tournament participation and their major achievements. So the USA actually has a much longer soccer tradition than most people would guess. Few people realize that they not only entered the first World Cup in 1930, but they took third place there. Can you imagine the joy in taking third place now?
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. The only cup they failed to participate in was in 1938 when they withdrew. The only, sorry. Ironically, their participation in the regional cup is not as good. They didn't enter four of the first five editions, which began in 1963, but they participated consistently from 1973. So they have won the competition several times in recent years, but their first title was relatively late in 1991. They do not have a regional competition. I should say they don't have a local competition like most teams in the CONCACAF region do. Central America had the UNCAF Nations Cup, and there was also a Caribbean Cup. But they have participated in the odd Confederation Cup and Copa America. We'll take a quick look at those. In the Confederation Cup, they've entered three of the eight editions of it. They took third place in 1999, were knocked out in the group stage in 2003, and then a very stunning second place in 2009. As far as the Copa America goes, they've also done fairly well there. They've entered four times, and been knocked out at the group stage twice. But they finished in fourth twice, in 1995 and in the 2016 Copa Centenario edition, which was the 100-year anniversary of the competition. So in terms of their achievement, of course, that third place in 1930 is their best result, even though a lot of people don't know about it. More recently, reaching the quarterfinal stage in the 2002 World Cup, where they were knocked out by Germany, is their best performance. As we mentioned, they never won the regional title before 1990, but they did win the first Gold Cup in 1991, and they have taken the title in seven of the 16 editions. Let's turn our attention now to the World Cup history.
All right. So despite the United States' impressive continuity in World Cup play, at least, their history is really best described as two separate periods of ascendancy. The first was in the early years, where they participated in the first World Cups and sometimes surprised. So in addition to third place in 1930, they pulled a shock win over England in the 1950 Cup, beating the 250-1 odds. What a result.
Yeah, the English newspapers, some of them reported it as a 10-1 win for England because they couldn't believe they thought it was a typing mistake that it was actually 1-0 USA.
Wow. From 1954 to 1994, however, they failed to qualify the World Cup, even when Mexico at times left the door wide open. Their second period of ascendancy started from 1994 and was motivated by their hosting of the World Cup that year. From that time, they have been almost on par with Mexico, and the two dominate their region. They have qualified for every World Cup from 1994 to 2014, or should say they had, though that is partly due to the strength of their region, which makes it easy for them to get one of the 3.5 spots available. It was just a shock when they failed to qualify in 2018. As mentioned, they made a big impact in 2002, reaching the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And they
That game. I was there in Korea.
That's right.
I was at the game.
Where they lost to Germany, I believe.
Yeah, I was actually kind of pulling for the USA there. They were a very likable team.
Yeah. So 2002 was their best performance, but they've actually passed the group stage four of the last six times. By 2014, they almost looked a world-class team capable of making an impact at the international level. But their failure in 2018 calls that into question.
Okay, and we will be taking a closer look at that 2018 run. But in general, we're going to take a closer look at their qualifying over the years. So there was no qualifying for the first Cup in 1930. And not many teams, especially from Europe, were willing to make the boat trip there. They did well, but that's a matter for another podcast where we look at their World Cup performance in the Cups in detail. In 1934, they did make a boat trip to Italy, and there they played a qualification game with Mexico. If you think about it, a game that could have been played without crossing the ocean. Unlike Mexico, it wasn't a waste of time because they won the game and qualified for the Cup, whereas Mexico kind of sailed back after their single game. They did not make the trip in 1938, though. They participated in a general boycott by the Americas when FIFA failed to keep their promise of alternating the cup between Europe and the Americas. After the war in 1950, they qualified alongside Mexico, the two of them finishing ahead of Cuba. Cuba hadn't boycotted in 1938 and actually reached the cup, so they were one of the top teams at the time. They finished behind Mexico in 1954, this time only one of them going through, and that began a long period of not reaching the cup. The next three cups also saw them finish behind Mexico. In 1970, Mexico hosted, but USA finished behind Haiti in round two of three, having finished ahead of Canada, which was actually a rare event in that period. In the previous round, they finished ahead of Canada, but they were knocked out by Haiti. And then for the next three cups after that, they finished behind both Mexico and Canada. And in 1986, they fell to Costa Rica in round two of three. Everything changed for the USA in 1990 as they prepared to host the 1994 World Cup. That also motivated a change in the qualifying structure. So the regional cup, known as the CONCACAF Championship, was no longer the qualifier for the World Cup, and it became a separate competition known as the Gold Cup. So in the first separate qualification, USA finished second in the final round, again behind Costa Rica, and it was, but it was enough to qualify. From then, they would qualify for every World Cup, including, of course, the one they hosted in 1994. They invariably won their semi-final rounds and finished among the top three in the final round, second behind Mexico in 1998, third behind Costa Rica and Mexico in 2002, and first ahead of both of those in 2006, and then first ahead of Mexico and Honduras in 2010. So let's see if they kept this up by taking a closer look at 2014 and 2018.
So in 2014, the U.S. entered in the third of four qualifying rounds, getting byes past the first two. And there they finished first in their group of four to advance to the Hex. They won their group ahead of Jamaica and Guatemala in the third round, but they lost to Jamaica on the road and managed only a draw in Guatemala. Once in the Hex, though, they were very consistent and finished first ahead of Costa Rica and Honduras, Mexico finishing fourth there and having to qualify through the Intercontinental Playoff. They won all their home games and finished with a record of 7 wins, 2 draws, and just a single defeat.
I think they lost 2 games, actually.
Oh, that is correct. 7 wins.
Yeah, there's a bit of a problem in the graphic there. Maybe we'll check that out down the road. Nevertheless, a pretty commanding qualifications, 4 points ahead of Costa Rica in second place.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, should we move on to 2018?
Right, so the USA entered in qualifying in round 4 of 5 and won an easy group ahead of Trinidad, Guatemala, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines. This despite drawing with Trinidad and losing to Guatemala in their away games. Once in the final round, though, they struggled mightily. They lost to Mexico at home in their opener and followed that up with a humiliating 4-0 loss in Costa Rica, also losing the reverse fixture to Costa Rica later on. Despite a really poor campaign, they only needed a point in their final match in Trinidad and Tobago, a team guaranteed last place with a record of 1 win and 8 losses. And Trinidad also fielded a B team with a number of young and untested players.
Okay, so Connor. Yeah, I have a special graphic here about the way the situation looked going into the last round.
Great, and I'll explain that for our listeners. So the situation going into the last round of fixtures saw the USA in third with 12 points, and Panama and Honduras both on 10 points. Panama were at home to Costa Rica, and Honduras were home to Mexico, both teams needing to win to surpass the United States, combined with the United States loss. All three teams were actually losing their matches at halftime. However, not only did the United States lose to Trinidad 2-1, but Honduras and Panama came back and won their final games, Panama scoring an 88th-minute winner against Costa Rica, condemning the United States to a 5th-place finish out of 6, not even taking 4th place or the Intercontinental spot.
Unbelievable. I mean, when you look at that graphic and you see USA is 2 points ahead of Panama and Honduras. Panama and Honduras are playing the most difficult teams in the region. It would have to be just a tremendous confluence of bad luck for them not to make it through, especially playing Trinidad and Tobago.
And the U.S. had a superior goal difference, so they even a draw would have been good enough. And again, despite a poor campaign, because you know, there's 3.5 spots out of 6. You can kind of get by being pretty average. But the U.S. were poor, and the loss to Trinidad, shocking and disgraceful.
I mean, the more you look into that, the more shocking it is. It's just unbelievable. That must have been so unbelievably shocking for American fans.
It was. It remains a very sore spot for the United States. And I remember watching that in some of the coverage. And there was existential questions about what this meant for U.S. soccer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it hasn't been all bad since then. But
you told me yet another detail before the podcast began that I didn't know. Maybe you should mention that one. It's about the player who scored.
Yeah, so talking about Trinidad scoring, fielding a B team, the player who got the winner for Trinidad in their 2-1 win has only ever scored one goal, and that's for his national team, including at youth level. So, you know, an unlikely player at the least, you know, to say the least, ends up eliminating the mighty United States.
Yeah, well, that one player sure has a story to tell.
Absolutely.
His grandkids. I'm sorry to American fans. I actually do like the USA team, but that story is just so unbelievable that I think I laugh every time it happens. I'm not kind of laughing at America. It's just such an uncanny story.
Yeah, hardly a script you could write.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to talk about America at the regional level. And sorry, I just need to find my place here. Yeah, so the same pattern reflects in regional soccer too, though it began slightly earlier. Shockingly, they either didn't enter or didn't qualify for the regional final from 1963 to 1981 and were knocked out in the group stage in their first successful qualification in 1985. However, from 1989, they dominated along with Mexico. They finished second in 1989. That was the last of the CONCACAF Championship round-robin tournaments. And when it switched to the Gold Cup in 1991, they won the first edition. And since then, they've rarely failed to finish in the top two. Their worst performance in 2000, when they only reached the quarterfinal. I can't really remember who won that in 2000. Do you, Connor?
I must say I do. It was a final between Canada and Colombia, with Canada victorious. Their yeah. Only Gold Cup victory.
That's right. And that's the only Gold Cup that hasn't been won by either America or Mexico. After a good period, winning 3 out of 4 times from 2002 to 2007, they've since fallen off, losing to Mexico 5-0 in 2009 and 4-2 in 2011, and a fourth place finish in 2015. This was punctuated with a title over Panama in 2013, though that was a tournament where few sent their A teams. They won again in 2017, came second in 2019, and they just won the recent Gold Cup in 2021. They didn't have to qualify for Gold Cup since 1991, unlike most other teams in the region. Most of the other teams qualified through their local zones, or I should put that in the past tense, qualified through their more local zones. The Central American Cup, called the UNCAF Nations Cup or the Copa Central America, and then for the Caribbean teams in the Caribbean Cup. Mexico, USA, and Canada had no local zones, though, so they qualified automatically. Before 1991, though, interestingly, the three kind of made up a North American zone, with only one of them qualifying for the CONCACAF Championship. Usually that was Mexico. But they abandoned this idea with the start of the Gold Cup in 1991. Recently, however, the CONCACAF Nations League was formed, so now they will have to qualify through that in order to reach the Gold Cup. And we're going to take a closer look at the last two Gold Cups in 2019 and 2021. How about 2019, Connor?
So yeah, as you mentioned, USA qualified automatically. This was the last time they've had or will have automatic qualification. They crushed Guyana and then Trinidad and Tobago in the group stage. That win against Trinidad and Tobago, kind of a sort of revenge for 2018 on the team that knocked them out of World Cup qualifying.
I'll bet, yeah, for sure.
They finished with the win over Panama in their final game. They then beat Curaçao and Jamaica in the knockout rounds, but then lost to Mexico, their arch rivals, in the final.
Okay, and I've actually given away the story here by going too far in my history. But anyway, we'll take a look at the details of 2021.
Yeah, so the USA did have to qualify through the Nations League. They lost to Canada in that tournament, but won all their other games and finished atop their Nations League A group and qualified for the Cup. They brought a B team to the Cup, excluding most of their European-based players. And in the tournament, they won all games by a score of 1-0, except for a convincing 6-1 win over Martinique in the group stage. The tournament began with a tight game over Haiti, and then an early goal against an otherwise dominant Canada saw them win all three games in the group stage to finish first in the group. A late goal against Qatar, or late goals, I should say, against Qatar and Jamaica saw them through to the final, where another late goal, this one coming in the 117th minute, so deep into extra time, saw them beat Mexico and claim their seventh Gold Cup title. It was the seventh time the USA met Mexico in the final, but only their second victory in that matchup.
Interesting. I didn't know that. All right. Thanks for that, Connor. And now let's take a look at 2022 World Cup qualifying and kind of see how they got there.
Well, there's no story to tell because the USA were automatically placed into the final round. That because they were ranked in the top five CONCACAF teams, which the U.S. typically is. So they haven't played any games yet. Their World Cup qualifying journey has yet to start.
Right. And as with Canada throughout the last 20 or 30 years, and we saw in the World Cup, they got rid of the previous winner automatically making it to the World Cup. And it was for this reason that it's not good to not have practice games or not have games in the lead up to the World Cup. So although they're probably happy to be in the final round, it may be a bit of a detriment to them to not have had played any games to get there.
Yeah, which perhaps makes it a bit more surprising that they didn't perhaps bring their A team to the Gold Cup, because it would have been really good preparation for them. Perhaps they use it as a chance to look at other players, but as we'll see, that can also pose some of its own problems as well.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's take a look at their final round schedule. And there are three games in September, early September, within the space of 6 days. Same thing in October, just two games in November, three games again in 6 days in January 27th to February 2nd, and then it ends with three games over 6 days in March. So holy cow, what a schedule.
It is, and for the U.S., their schedule kind of sees them generally alternating between home and away games, so there's a lot of traveling involved. For example, in September, they start with a trip to El Salvador, then return to the United States, and then go back down to Honduras. So it will be grueling, as it will be for all teams.
Yeah, I didn't mean to kind of say that was particular to America, because all of them have those thick dates and that travel. America probably actually a bit luckier than most, since they're kind of in the middle. Is there anything else you noticed there, Connor?
In their first seven games, they play Costa Rica and Mexico in the last two, and both of those at home. And those potentially being their main competition, perhaps Canada as well.
Sorry, do you mean they play Mexico and Costa Rica away?
Sorry, in their first seven games, Mexico and Costa Rica, they play kind of towards the end. So they play them in October, November. So it does... It does give the USA a chance to start out with perhaps some of the weaker teams and get off to a a good start, perhaps an early lead. Those other games against Mexico and Costa Rica come later.
Yeah, I was focused at the end where I saw their two of their last three games are Mexico and Costa Rica away. So if they do have a fairly light start, that's a pretty heavy ending.
Yeah, from their point of view, they'll hope those games are inconsequential and that they'll have more or less qualified by the time they play Mexico and Costa Rica, both in that final set of three games in March.
Yeah, I mean, as dominant as they are in the region, they're not very good on the road, and that was part of the problem in 2018. Not so much in 2014, but, they're a strong team, but they're definitely assailable on the road.
Yeah, and we saw them in the Nations League, too, losing to Canada for the first time in 34 years. Right. On the road.
And that was on the road, too. They do play Canada before a lot of teams play Canada in the deep of winter. And I don't know how teams from hot countries are gonna cope with that. But they're kind of lucky to be playing Canada in September, fairly early on in the schedule.
No, that's their home.
Sorry.
Game.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm mixing home and away here. They do play Canada probably on the very worst date on the schedule, January 30th, playing in the icy winds of Canada.
Yeah, we'll see. It might be Toronto, but Canada could go further north to the frigid lands of Edmonton, which we call home.
Schedule the game here. We'd be happy, although I might be watching it from home.
That I would probably be with you there with a nice cup of hot chocolate from the warmth indoors.
Yeah, well, they probably do have some players, say, from New England or Minnesota United and stuff, who will be somewhat inured to the cold. But other teams in, say, Houston or Florida might find it tough. And in general, I think the teams from hot countries, which is basically everyone, will struggle up in Canada. Sorry, I don't know how we switched this to a discussion of Canada, but let's move on to talk about some of their key players.
Yeah, and the U.S. has a lot of them. It's always difficult to kind of gauge who their best team is because it changes, and that's just due to the sheer number of players available. There's times where they will include a lot of their European-based players, and there are a lot of them, and other times they stick more with their MLS-based crew to potentially avoid some of the travel. Looking at some names going back to the 2018 World Cup, Jozy Altidore was a big name. He's a bit aging and doesn't seem to be perhaps as involved, though he did score two goals in the 2019 World Cup. Clint Dempsey was a big name that has since retired. Michael Bradley, again, kind of into his 30s. Kristen Pulisic is one player who wasn't involved in the 2021 Gold Cup, but will certainly be involved and probably have a big role to play in the octagon coming up here. And he was an important player in the 2018 World Cup qualifying, despite their lack of success, scoring seven goals in qualifying. Some other names on the list, Giassi Zardes, he's kind of been there throughout it all, chipping in with goals. Paul Areola is another one. Josh Sargent is a young player now with Norwich City. Weston McKennie, a young player with Juventus. So two of their overseas players. And then in the 2021 World Cup, we saw a couple players, Matthew Hopp, Daryl DK, as well as a couple defenders on the score sheet, and Miles Robinson and Shaquille Moore, who may or may not be that involved in the World Cup qualifying, depending on which players the U.S. chooses to bring in.
Right. Miles Robinson scored that late extra time goal to kind of win it all for the USA. And Shaquille Moore is now a swear word in my household because he scored 20 seconds into the game against Canada. We just can't bear to mention that. Okay, well, yes, well, maybe my contention here for the U.S., which I worry about for them, is just so many cards on the table. I heard during the Gold Cup, one of the commentators say that he expected only one of the players on the field to be kind of part of the starting lineup. I can't remember who that player was. It could have been Miles Robinson. But anyway, it doesn't matter. As you said earlier in the podcast, they did not bring their A team to the Gold Cup, and they haven't had many games. I think the only ones really were the kind of the championship of the CONCACAF League A, where they played a semi-final and a final. That's just two games. So I really worry in terms of, you know, there are players on the teams like the goalkeeper, Matt Turner, who might be resentful that say, Zach Steffen, who plays for Manchester City, will just come in and, you know, is he supposed to kind of claim the top spot, saying, I play with Man City and you're, you know, third or fourth down on the list? Same with someone like Sergio Dest coming in. Is he just going to step into a role that Reggie Cannon, I think, has worked hard to kind of make his own, or, you know, other players? What do you make of that?
Yeah, we'll get more into it in our players podcast on the United States, kind of some of the dilemmas facing the U.S., but it will be a difficult thing to manage. The U.S. hasn't played a lot of competitive games, and we didn't see them at the 2018 World Cup to kind of get a sense of who their best team is. So there'll be a selection headache, but I agree, there's lots of players in contention, and I don't know the chopping and changing is always helpful for a squad.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, I think it'll be quite a difficult selection for the coach, for the manager, with so many names before him and, you know, players potentially getting upset that they're not being chosen, for example, after a good performance in the Gold Cup. Okay, well, let's move on to the next section. How we expect America to do. So let's take a look at their rankings, Connor.
Yeah, so the United States are currently 10th in FIFA and 17th in the ELO rankings. They're second, according to both systems, in North America. So they're behind Mexico, who are the number one CONCACAF team. For the United States, they've risen recently. And no doubt the recent victory over Mexico in the Gold Cup final will help. They often find themselves kind of in the 20 to 30 range in FIFA, and even kind of the 30 to 40 range in ELO. But they are undoubtedly one of the top two teams in the region in the rankings. So we would expect them to, you know, more or less finish there in the octagon.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, thanks. We weren't able to find odds. I'm always curious to see what the bookies are saying. Not that I'm a betting man, but it's good to kind of get the pulse of where they stand. I think most people would agree that second would be where they stand, even though they did beat Mexico in the Gold Cup. But first or second. But let's take a look at their record with other teams. Okay, so with Canada, they have a winning record. They have 10 wins and 3 draws and 7 losses. So not as winning as one might guess, but it must be said that Canada won 5 or 6 of those games, 6 of those games, by 1981. So really, Canada has just won that one game, which we can see on the graphic for those who are watching on YouTube, in 2021 Gold Cup qualifying, where Canada won in Canada. But then they turned around and lost 4-1 in the leg in the USA. The USA also beat them in the 2021 Gold Cup. The goal 20 seconds in, Connor.
Tough one to take.
Okay, against the Costa Rica, it's 14 wins, 4 draws, and 11 losses. So a fairly even record with Costa Rica. They beat them in the 2002 Gold Cup final, They also beat them in the 2017 Gold Cup semi-final. But I think you specifically pointed out their two losses to Costa Rica in 2018 World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, with Costa Rica, it's interesting. I mean, unlike Canada, where a lot of Canada's wins came early and the U.S. have been dominant since, that's not the case with Costa Rica. They kind of exchange wins and losses, and in their last 12 games, they're actually even. 5 wins, 5 losses, and 2 draws apiece.
Interesting. All right, moving on to El Salvador then. They have an incredibly good record over El Salvador, having never lost to them. It's 11 wins, 3 draws, and no losses. So their most recent games, they won 5-1 in the 2013 Gold Cup quarterfinal, and then they won 2-0 in the 2017 Gold Cup quarterfinal. So can't expect El Salvador to get much out of the USA. With Honduras, it's actually kind of similar. 13 wins, 2 draws, and 2 losses. So I think we said earlier they beat the Honduras in the 1991 Gold Cup final in the first Gold Cup. They won 4-3 on penalties. More recently, in 2014, they exchanged home wins. That's World Cup qualifying. 2015 Gold Cup group stage, the USA won 2-1. Keeping in mind that for all of these recent Gold Cups, it's a USA home advantage. So the U.S. has done quite well. In 2018 World Cup qualifying, they thrashed Honduras 6-0. But part of the problem at the end was that they tied in Honduras 1-1. Jamaica, it's 11 wins, 6 draws, and just 2 losses. They lost to Jamaica in the 2015 Gold Cup semifinal, but they've beaten them 3 times since, in the 2017 Gold Cup final, 2019 Gold Cup semifinal, and then recently in the 2021 Gold Cup quarterfinal, all 3 of those wins. And finally, against Mexico, it is 8 wins, 8 draws, and 19 losses. So some of the big results between them were the 1993 Gold Cup final. They lost 4-0. 2019 Gold Cup final, lost 5-0.
2009, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. What? Yeah, 2009 Gold Cup final, lost 5-0. 2011 Gold Cup final, lost 4-2. 2019 Gold Cup final, lost 1-0. And finally, was this their only win over Mexico, Connor?
They did win one other Gold Cup final.
Okay.
Over. Yeah, I'd have to check the year, but they have one other.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind checking. Anyway, 2021, the most recent one, they won on that late goal in extra time, 1-0. In World Cup qualifying, we'll just look at 2018, and there they were bested by Mexico, losing at home, actually, and tying away. Again, part of the difficulty in 2018. But we're also going to look at the pre-1990 and then post-1990, because there's a massive difference. In before 1990, they just had 2 wins and 3 draws and 12 losses. But it's much more even since 1990, with 6 wins, 5 draws, and 7 losses. So a fairly even record over that period.
And just to confirm, that other victory for the United States in the final over Mexico came in 2007.
Oh, okay. So 2 wins in the final, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 losses. Okay. And finally, we'll just take a look at Panama. They have a record of 13 wins, 4 draws, and 4 draws and 2 losses, yeah. And in recent times, they've done well. Actually, the two were in the Gold Cup final in 2005, and the USA won that a scoreless game, but they won 3-1 on penalties. 2013 was also a Gold Cup final. USA won 1-0. They met in 2018 World Cup qualifying, and again an away leg tie in Panama it was a loss of points for the US, but they won convincingly at home 4-0. And then 2019 Gold Cup group stage, they won 1-0. So we'll just do a little summary. This was suggested by a listener, and go through all seven teams. So they have commanding records over El Salvador, Jamaica, Panama, and Honduras. And then they have fairly even records, but edging out Canada and Costa Rica. And then the only team they have a losing record against is Mexico. But again, in recent times, that's also fairly even. All right. Anything to add there, or do you want to launch into our discussion?
Yeah, I think we let's get into the discussion. The big question for the U.S. is, you know, how do they bounce back from 2018, where they finished fifth of sixth? My feeling, and I think the feeling of many, and perhaps a Gold Cup victory will reinforce this, is that it was a blip and nothing more than that. I think it was surprising, certainly at the time, but I don't think there's any need to look much more into it than that. And, you know, many strong teams have had blips in the past, and I think that's it was nothing more than that. And I expect the U.S. to be to qualify fairly comfortably this time round.
Well, while I agree with you that they will qualify comfortably, I think there is a bit of a need to look at their away record, which, given their domination in the region, is a bit shaky on the road, and I think they'll definitely want to improve that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's the some of the smaller Central American teams, and I say smaller more in terms of country size, the Costa Rica, Panama, Honduras, those are ones that they should be winning. They have the quality to do that. It's unlikely to cost them, and it generally hasn't been costly in the past, because three or four teams will qualify out of six, but it can catch up with you, as it certainly did in 2018. So there is a need to win those games, even if you can get by with a few drop points here and there.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you. There's no sense in kind of navel staring at the 2018 disaster. I think more than anything, it'll probably motivate them to be more careful this time, because something like that can happen. One of the things I've liked about America over the years is their grit. You know, we saw that in the 1950 World Cup against England, obviously a very gritty performance there. And I think it's embodied by players like Clint Dempsey and Brian, who was the one before Dempsey's time who played?
Yeah, Brian McBride, with a bit of overlap.
Yeah, you know, they have a lot of gritty, determined players there with a kind of just get it done attitude, and hopefully 2018 will motivate them more in that direction. But I do think undermining that is the number of players who will probably feel like they deserve to be in the starting lineup and who won't be in the starting lineup. It's a bit of a worry. I know I've asked you about that, but do you have any more thoughts?
Yeah, I think the USA will need to kind of nail down a starting spot, because they haven't had that many competitive games really since last qualifying, which was a very long time ago, in 2018, just a couple Nations League games in there. Competitive games in the Gold Cup, but not where they brought their first team. So yeah, it is a question of what does the United States best 11 look like, and as I said, we'll get into that a little bit more in our players podcast when we look at some of the players in more detail.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what their starting squad and their bench looks like, and as you say, they're going to have to gel pretty quickly. The beginning of the schedule is fairly gentle and may allow them to kind of organize a strong starting 11. They're going to have to come into March with I think you said, I think they're going to have to come into March pretty much guaranteed to pass, because if they really have to win those away games, that's a big ask.
Absolutely. But yeah, realistically, I see them competing with Mexico for first or second, and would kind of be surprised, even in a what should be a competitive qualification tournament, would be surprised if they finished any lower than second.
I'm not satisfied with that, Connor. I want a firm prediction. Is it first or is it second?
I'm going to go second. They've won this this final qualifying round in the past and certainly could do again. But I do give Mexico the edge, partly because of the USA's kind of weak, poor form. Not to say that Mexico never slips up, because they do. But on the whole, I see Mexico as a slightly stronger team than the United States at this point in time.
All right. Well, I'm going to be bold, and I know that my opinion is imbued with a bias towards Canada. But I really do think there is room for someone else to move into second with the USA's road record and kind of undecided squad right now. I might be wrong about that. Maybe the coach has a clear impression of the squad, but I think there could be a bit of dissension on the team playing into it. And so I'm gonna be bold and predict that America comes third and Canada moves into second. Am I going too far?
I think you're going a little far, but I love the optimism. It does seem that we agree on the fact, though, that Mexico is likely the stronger team and more likely to finish first.
Yeah, who knows? By the time the Mexico podcast comes around, I may be putting Canada first. Well, great talking to you about this, Connor. And hopefully we will have time in November or December to look at the situation halfway through and see how things are shaping up.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see it all unfold.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Talk to you next time.
You bet. Bye-bye.